All right. Get back over to the book of Genesis. We continue with our study of Joseph. All right. Chapter 40. And we see that Joseph now has been imprisoned. We saw that last week. And so a lot of things have transpired with him. And you recall, if you haven't been here for the classes, you're probably somewhat familiar with the story of Joseph already. But he has made his stand for what is right, did not give in to the temptation of Potiphar's wife, but as a result of that, he ends up in prison. And he has a difficult time. I think we've covered that pretty good. Sometimes we may think that it was nice and cozy for him in prison, but it wasn't. And because of his faithfulness and he didn't waver, he was elevated. We'll see by certain statements as we go forward that even at the best of times, it wasn't very good for Joseph. It wasn't great for Joseph. It certainly wasn't like being free. He had a hard time in prison. He refers to it as affliction and hardship. And so he is suffering for doing nothing really but what is right. And so we've tried to make the point that sometimes as Christians, sometimes as the people of God, that will happen. We can't get discouraged. We have to continue to fight the good fight and not lose our confidence in God and be like Joseph. One of the things about Joseph is that he had a very positive attitude. If you weren't here last week, we talked about how that he, when he came into the room where his new inmates were, these officers of Pharaoh, that he saw that their face was downcast, and he noticed that. Even though he had his own problems, he noticed that. But another aspect of that was that he was just basically an individual who stayed positive through all of this that he was going through. And there's something to be said about that. And there's something to be said about having a good, positive attitude just in general. I think that's a good thing for those of us who are Christians. It's good for anybody, everybody. But particularly as Christians, we should have a good attitude. We can't forget. The Bible tells us to rejoice always. That's a fruit of the Spirit. That is joy. So no matter what's going on in life, it is not an excuse to be always upset and always angry at something or another, always bitter at this person or that person or just even the circumstances of life. God wants us to be full of joy and to basically be positive in our outview of things, regardless of what's going on. So that's important. Now, I'll get back to that a little bit more here in just a minute, because another aspect of that is, you know, we don't want to take that too far. Like, there's some people who are tried to be so positive to where they abstain from anything negative whatsoever, the so-called, you know, just positive thinking mentality. And again, I'm all for positive thinking. I hope that we will generally be positive, but not to the point where we want to abstain from anything that's going to be viewed as negative, anything that's going to make anyone else unhappy, anything that's going to offend anybody. We just purposely refrain from all of that because sometimes those things are necessary. And one of the things that we'll see from our story as we continue with Joseph is that though he was very positive, clearly, that he didn't avoid the negative. And we'll see that as we look at these dreams from these two officers of Pharaoh. So, in chapter 40, then, we get down to about verse 9, and we talked about all of that. Again, he walks in and he sees them. He asks them to tell him what's wrong. So verse 9 says, the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him, in my dream there was a vine before me, and on the vine there were three branches. As soon as it budded, its blossoms shot forth and the clusters ripened and into grapes. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. And so, not really that bizarre of a dream. Remember, it's a dream. Dreams are dreams. You know, dreams can be pretty bizarre at times. And but you stop and think about this. Think it's unusual for a cupbearer to dream about giving a cup of wine to Pharaoh? That pretty normal. That was used to be anyway before he was in prison, his job. And so nothing unusual about that at all. It all seems pretty positive. I think I told you before that I dream about my job all the time. I dream about you all, not individual. I don't remember seeing any of you as individuals, but just you dream, whatever job occupation you have, you probably dream about it in some form or fashion once in a while. Like, you know, sometimes there, I might dream that I'm preaching to 600 people or something, and I forget what I was up to preach about, or something, you know, something crazy. But that's not unusual. And I'm not one who thinks dreams always mean something. But in biblical times, like some people even today, they do think all of our dreams mean something. And perhaps our dreams sometimes are related to our subconsciousness and might be related to something that's just happened to us or whatever. But they really believed in biblical times that they had a dream that it had some important message for them. And so these two, when they had this dream, again, this fellow had a dream, wasn't all that unusual to dream about what his occupation was. He just didn't understand it. And so thinking that every dream has something very significant to say and not understanding it, then he really was downcast and wanted to know what it was. And so he tells Joseph the dream. And the good news is, even though he didn't have access to the magicians and soothsayers and those who could interpret dreams or who claimed to be able to interpret dreams, fortunate for him, Joseph was there. And he did have the ability to interpret dreams. And so he tells this dream to Joseph. And Joseph said at verse 12, said to him, this is its interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office. And you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly when you were his cupbearer. And so very positive, isn't it? You can imagine. You think that would bring him some happiness there? Figure out, oh, this is great. This is going to be a great outcome. And he's going to be restored and be right back to where he was before he was imprisoned. And so that's very good for him. Only Joseph says, remember me when it is well with you. And please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh. And so get me out of this house, for I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews. And here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the pit. So that gives us a little insight into Joseph's thinking, doesn't it? And when you stop, yeah, I mean, again, Joseph himself. And to me, this makes Joseph look even more impressive. Like, he was a very positive thinker, but it's not like he didn't stop sometimes and think about the situation that he was in. He did not like where he was. He wasn't happy in this situation. He much rather have been back home with his family. And he realizes that he's here again out of no fault of his own. He calls the place a pit. And had to, you know, he had to think of the cistern that he was thrown into by his brothers originally. But that gives us, again, some insight into his overall thinking. Yet, even though he wasn't happy with the situation, didn't want to be where he was, he didn't, again, allow bitterness to overwhelm him. He didn't allow depression to overwhelm him. And so, again, we have to be impressed with him. He wants this cupbearer to remember him. He pleads with him, please remember me. And so, well, then at verse 16, it says, when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was favorable, he said to Joseph, I also had a dream. There was three cake baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket there was all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh. But the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head. Now, that doesn't sound very positive at all, does it? Like you, even if you don't understand what that dream meant, you could probably sit back and know, particularly if you believed every dream had some kind of meaning for it, that couldn't be a good situation. The birds eating the food that's meant for Pharaoh right off my head, that can't be good. And so the way this reads is, you notice verse 16, when the chief baker saw the interpretation was favorable. It was almost like, you know, again, he could tell this is not a great dream, and he wasn't necessarily going to volunteer and ask Joseph to interpret it. Like he did. It wasn't until he listened to the interpretation of the cupbearer's dream and thought, oh, that's positive, and so maybe mine will have a positive outlook as well. And so after he saw the other one was positive, then he asked Joseph about his dream, and of course we remember that his was not so positive. And so Joseph answered and said, this is its interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh from you. So not at all like the cupbearers. And two things we'll point out here, picking back up with what I was saying in the beginning. First, with Joseph, we have to be impressed that he was willing to share this dream. Now, he's kind of, it appears as if he's developed somewhat of a relationship with these two men. He was assigned to attend to them specifically. And as we have pointed out, he saw how they were downcast right away. He noticed that he developed a relationship with them. And as he interprets the dream of the cupbearer, you know, that'd be wonderful. He'd like enjoy telling the cupbearer, hey, you're about to be restored. In 3 days, you'll be right back where you were before. But now he comes to the baker. And he has to tell the baker, in 3 days, you're going to be executed. And that wasn't very positive, was it? And yet Joseph doesn't hesitate. And this is sort of what I was getting at before, just not only from our standpoint of wanting to hear good things, but sometimes, particularly as Christians, we have to be willing to tell the truth, don't we? Even when it's not positive. We have to be willing as, you know, I may be the preacher here, but we're all preachers, aren't we? All of us have to teach the truth to others whenever we have the opportunity. We sometimes have to preach to brethren. We have to reprove and rebuke, not just preachers. We all have to do that. We can't have this attitude that we want everything to be so positive that we're not even going to warn those who need warning, that we're not going to teach people who need teaching, or even, again, rebuke brethren sometimes, or tell friends or family members who aren't members of the body of Christ exactly what their fate is going to be if they don't obey the gospel of Christ. We can't just want to tickle the ears of people, because that's just not the right attitude to have. We need to be like Joseph. This is a terrible, I can't imagine a worse thing to have to tell somebody. And yet he didn't hesitate. There are passages that come to my mind where we see that spirit just isn't always there. Look over at Isaiah chapter 30. And we need to be more like Joseph, willing to always teach the truth, even when people won't like it. But the other side of it, we have to not be like the baker, perhaps, was, and only wanting to hear truth if we think it's going to be favorable. You should want to be told the truth if you may not like it. If I have a weakness and I may not want to hear you tell me, Don, you know, this isn't good. You ought to change this. But you ought not to do that. I may not like that, but I should want to hear that. If I need that kind of admonition, I should want that. But not everybody is like that. In fact, perhaps most people aren't like that. Here in Isaiah chapter 30, it's interesting. At verse 8, it says, "And now go, write it before them on a tablet and inscribe it in a book, that it may be for the time to come, as a witness forever. For they are rebellious people, lying children, children unwilling to hear the instructions of the Lord." And sadly, he's describing, as you can tell, the people of God. And they're unwilling to hear instruction of the Lord, who say to the seer, "Do not see," and to the prophet, "Do not prophesy to us what is right. Speak to us smooth things. Prophesy illusions. Leave the way. Turn aside from the path. Let us hear no more about the Holy One of Israel." What an attitude to have. And whether it's articulated or not, do you think there are people like that in the world? Just, "You prophet, go away." Or even in the church, "Preacher, I don't want to hear that. Just stop it. Just go away." I'll give you another passage like that. Turn over to Amos. Amos chapter 7. And at verse 7 beginning, we can see this happening over and over with the children of Israel. But we even see warning of this in the New Testament. But Amos chapter 7 at verse 7, "This is what he showed me. Behold, the Lord was standing beside a wall built with a plumb line, in his hand. And the Lord said to me, 'Amos, what do you see?' And I said, 'A plumb line.' And then the Lord said, 'Behold, I am setting a plumb line in the midst of my people Israel. I will never again pass by them. The high palaces of Isaac shall be made desolate, and the sanctuaries of Israel shall be laid waste. And I will rise up against the house of Jeroboam with the sword. Then Amaziah the priest," he was an apostate priest, by the way, "Amaziah the priest of Bethel sent to Jeroboam, king of Israel, saying, 'Amos has conspired against you in the midst of the house of Israel. The land is not able to bear all his words, for thus Amos has said, Jeroboam shall die by the sword, and Israel must go into exile away from his land.'" Was this Amos conspiring? He's like Joseph. He's just telling the truth, wasn't he? God revealed something to him, and he's just telling it. He's warning as a prophet. He was a good prophet. He's letting them know, you know, you need to repent, because this is what's going to happen. This is if you refuse to stop living the way you were living. Of course, they were in apostasy by this time. It was almost past repentance. And so he's prophesying these things. But Amaziah comes along and says, "Oh, he's conspiring. He's conspiring against you." Notice at verse 14, verse 12, "And Amaziah said to Amos, 'O seer, go flee away to the land of Judah and eat bread there and prophesy there, but never again prophesy at Bethel. For it is the king's sanctuary, and it is a temple of the kingdom.'" Same kind of attitude. "Amos, go away. Go to Judah. Go over there. Maybe they want to hear some of this harsh stuff. We don't want to hear it here. You go prophesy somewhere else." And so the point of all of this, we want to make sure that we don't have that attitude. We want to be more like Joseph, in the willing to proclaim the truth, be involved in the proclamation of the gospel of Christ, even if it's offensive to people. But kind of, you know, like the baker, I want to hear the word if it's favorable. If it's going to make me feel good, then I want to hear it. No, we should always want to hear it, no matter what the situation is. All right, Joseph, very impressive individual it didn't matter if it was good, if it was positive, if it was negative. He knew that it came from God. He was going to interpret it, and he was going to tell it, even if the people didn't like it. In this case, it was the very negative message to the baker. And I suspect, it doesn't say it specifically here, but, you know, what terrible news. And you think maybe he even thought to himself, oh, that's not going to happen. No, that's maybe Joseph is wrong about that. He certainly would hope that. But as we read forward, we find, no, that it was exactly as Joseph said, verse 20, on the third day, which was the Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all his servants and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. And that leads right into the next chapter there. But Joseph was truly a man of God. What does the Bible say about a prophet? How do you know a prophet is really a prophet? Right. If the word doesn't come about the way you said, you're a false prophet. But if it does, then obviously you prove yourself to be true. And Joseph, you know, we don't think of Joseph as a prophet, really. But in interpreting the dream, he was telling the future what was going to happen. And it happened in 3 days exactly the way he said it would. He was truly a spokesman for God. And so it happened. And the sad thing about the whole situation is this cupbearer forgot all about Joseph. So you go into the next chapter, and it says, after 2 whole years. So now you just stop and, you know, just picture this in your mind. We've already said, based upon the words of Joseph himself, he's in a situation he doesn't like. He desperately wants to be out of this pit. He pled with the cupbearer, please show me this kindness. And so he doesn't want to be in the situation. And you can imagine, again, human nature being the way it is, when he's pleading with the cupbearer, what do you think the cupbearer would have, just as a human being, would have said to Joseph when he pled with him? Oh, please remember me. What do you think he would say? Right. Right. They had developed a relationship. And this was a very positive situation for him to hear. Well, man, 3 days, I'm going to be restored. I'm going to be right back into my position. I can guarantee you, though it's not specifically said, I know, I can guarantee you he didn't say to Joseph, Joseph, stop your whining. I'm not going to think about you at all. He probably said, oh, sure. Oh, Joseph, don't worry about it. Yeah, I guarantee you, right when I get out, if this dream comes about just like you say, boy, I'll mention you right away. Don't worry about it. A few days, you're going to be free just like me. But he forgot about him. And it appears later on when Joseph, as we'll get into here momentarily, when he has his dreams, it appears as if the cupbearer did plan on letting Pharaoh know what happened with Joseph. But he forgot. And perhaps that demonstrates, really, no doubt, demonstrates a little self-centeredness and whatever, and not very kind, whatever, but whatever, for whatever reason, he just forgot. And for 2 whole years, Joseph sat there in this place he didn't want to be, in this pit, and having to endure that situation. Can you just imagine that? He fully expects that this cupbearer is going to, he gets restored. He's going to very, very soon, real quick, he's going to tell Pharaoh all about what he has done, and probably every time the prison keeper came to the door, he probably jumped up and went over to the door expecting, he's coming to get me. The cupbearer told him about me, and now he's coming to let me go. I'm going to be free. And you can imagine, then a few days pass by, and he starts, well, you know, things take some time, so, you know, probably still a little bit excited whenever the keeper would come to the prison door. But what about then a couple of weeks passed by? Now he just, instead of jumping up and going to the prison door, he just kind of stands up and maybe this will be the time. Then months go by. Now what does Joseph do when he hears the keeper coming to the door? Maybe just a glance, you know, maybe just a faint hope maybe finally he remembered me. And but this went on for 2 years. So you can imagine, after about a year passed, he didn't even think anything. Whenever the keeper came to the door, he's forgot about me altogether. And can you imagine that kind of mental anguish for 2 years? Do you think now finally, after all that you've been through, you might have some bitterness? Like one thing after another keeps happening to Joseph. And this is a little thing. All the cupbearer had to do is mention his name to Pharaoh. And day after day, week after week, month after month, 2 years, and nothing. And nothing would have happened if it wasn't for what comes next. And that is, of course, the dream that that Pharaoh had. So, in verse 1 again of chapter 41, after 2 years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile. And behold, there came up out of the Nile 7 cows, attractive and plump. And they fed in the reed grass. And behold, 7 other cows, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly, thin cows ate up the 7 attractive, plump cows. And Pharaoh awoke. Now, again, dreams will be dreams. And so sometimes dreams can get kind of bizarre. At first, nothing, you know, you have dreams all the time. And sometimes dreams can start off pretty normally. And, you know, this idea of cows in the Nile wasn't anything to that, really. Cows, we're told, would often go into whatever body of water they were near at that time. Egypt was so hot, and they would sometimes go into these bodies of water, whatever was near, and they would go all the way to their neck and just stay there for hours, trying to escape the heat of the sun and any of the flies and other pesky insects and things. So that was common. I mean, this was nothing. This was something that happened. In fact, sometimes we're told they would stay in there and not come out unless they were hungry, which is kind of exactly what is being depicted in this dream. So they come out. These 7 cows come out, attractive and plump, and they begin to eat. Nothing strange about that, until 7 other cows come out, and they're ugly and thin. That's a little bit strange, because why would, I don't know about the ugly part of it, but why would these cows be thin? They would have the same access to food as the plump cows, and so, you know, what's going on with that? But they come out and they're thin, and then it really gets bizarre, and all of a sudden, instead of eating the grass, they eat the 7 plump cows, and Pharaoh wakes up. Because that would startle you in a dream. Oh, that was weird. And that's the way dreams go. You're having a dream all of a sudden, and then something real weird happens and wakes you up out of your sleep. And so that's what happens with Pharaoh. He wakes up. But then, of course, he falls asleep very quickly. And he has a second dream. And basically, it's the same as the first, only the objects change. That's just about the only difference. It says he fell asleep and he dreamed a second time. And behold, 7 ears of grain, plump and good, were growing on one stalk. And behold, after them sprouted 7 ears, then and blighted by the east wind. And the thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump, full ears. And Pharaoh awoke. And so remember now, to these people at that time, these dreams mean something. And he knows, but he just doesn't have a clue what they would mean. If you know, when you think back to the dream, particularly of the cupbearer, some of that kind of made a whole, you know, made some sense, especially after the interpretation. But, you know, you could perhaps predict a little bit what was going on. What in the world does this stuff mean? This dream. There's no way Pharaoh would know what in the world that was. And so right away, he wants to know. And so he calls all the magicians and the wise men and tells them the dream. But there was none of them who could interpret them to Pharaoh. Which is kind of an interesting detail there. That Pharaoh, he must have trusted his magicians and all these pretty good. Because he tells them the dream, And they were honest enough to say, you know, we can't help you. Like that kind of, you remember when Nebuchadnezzar had a dream? What did he do? Right. He wouldn't tell them. Nebuchadnezzar was smart. I'm not about to tell you the dream. You just make something up. And so he didn't tell them. Pharaoh must have trusted these wise men, magicians, because he actually tells them the dream. And they're honest enough, because, you know, most people, if they were in that situation, particularly with the madman Nebuchadnezzar, they probably would make something up. But these have enough trust that Pharaoh trusts them, and they trust Pharaoh. They just say, hey, can't help. We don't have a clue. We don't know. And that's when the cupbearer remembers. At verse 9 it says, then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, I remember my offenses today. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me and the chief baker into custody in the house of the captain of the guard, we dreamed on the same night, and he and I each having a dream with its own interpretation. A young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. When we told him, he interpreted our dreams to us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his dream. And as he interpreted it to us, so it came about. I was restored to my office, and the baker was hanged. And so, of course, Pharaoh's very much interested in that. And now the ball is rolling towards the exaltation of Joseph. And stop and think. We only have a few minutes here. I mean, this whole thing is, there's so much providence in everything that we've been dealing with since we began this study. You think of everything really had to happen just right for Joseph and for Pharaoh and everybody just to arrive at this moment. And this is a very significant moment, because the truth is, I mean, all of this, again, is according to the plan of God. He has to get his people into Egypt. And the importance of that is, remember, this is how the original Abrahamic covenant is going to be fulfilled with regard to turning his descendants into a great nation. And it's through them that the Messiah would come. All of this is very significant. But think of all the little pieces that had to fall apart. But even beginning with his brothers throwing him into a pit. What's the chances of that? Even in an ungodly society, and you know, there's a lot of ungodly people, to have the murderous kind of heart that his brothers had towards him wasn't all that usual. But that had to happen in order for Joseph to get to Egypt. And then the Midianites had to be coming along at exactly the right time. And then Joseph had to be sold into a man of somewhat repute in Egypt in order for everything to develop the way it did. And he ended up in Potiphar's house. And Potiphar had to have an unscrupulous wife who would do what she did in order for him to end up in prison. And the cupbearer and the baker had to offend, or particularly the cupbearer, had to offend Pharaoh so that he ended up in prison and having his dream interpreted. I mean, all of these little pieces. What if the cupbearer... Now listen, the cupbearer was restored. What does that tell you? He was innocent, wasn't he? So what if he was never accused in the first place? That's what providence is. I mean, every little situation. Or what if the cupbearer didn't forget Joseph and right away told Pharaoh about what Joseph did, and Joseph was restored instead of 2 years later? Well, that would have messed everything up. That would have been 2 years before Pharaoh ever had the dream that needed to be interpreted. And so, I mean, you see, the providence of God in the story of Joseph, all of these little details had to happen just right for us to be right here where we are now. And it did, because it was all according to God's providence. And it makes you wonder, doesn't it? I've said to you before, the providence of God is the most difficult subject, I believe, in all of the Bible. And just even understanding what is providential and what is not. And I don't have a clue about it. But things work out. It's just really kind of amazing with this. But the story had to, everything had to happen for him to be able to now stand before Pharaoh, and he's about to be exalted because of it all. And we'll see. Go ahead, Matt, real, very quick. Right. Yes. Right. Absolutely. You don't know. You know, you've heard me say, and that's the second bell, so we're going to quit here. But listen, make no mistake about it. Some things in life happen by chance. There's no question about that. That's easily proven in the Word of God. And so dividing those times when something's chance, or when God is trying to wake us up, or when the devil's behind, whatever, that's just hard all to really divide. And you'll need a better man than me to be able to do that. But as we look at, we know because of our study of Genesis and Joseph's situation that this is all providential. And it absolutely had to be for it all to work out just right. And it did. So next week, we'll see Joseph interpreting the dreams of Pharaoh and showing his wisdom and the amazing exhortation for him to be the second in power in all of Egypt. Quite amazing, really. And we'll see that next week.